Well, the holidays have come and gone once again, but if you've forgotten to get that special someone in your life a gift, well, Mint Mobile is extending their holiday offer of half off unlimited wireless. So here's the idea. You get it now. You call it an early present for next year. What do you have to lose?
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Limited time 50% off regular price for new customers. Upfront payment required. $45 for 3 months, $90 for 6 months, or $180 for 12-month plan. Taxes and fees extra. Speeds may slow after 50 gigabytes per month when network is busy. See terms.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And a good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to this edition of our Smart Garden Show on this chilly Saturday. We've dropped to 10 now, and we might get back to 12. That's it for today. But let me bring some excitement here because Julie Weisenhorn is back. Where have you been?
Danny, how are you? I've been getting a new knee.
and everything went well, I hope?
Everything went well. I've got a match set now, and I'm getting ready. I thought I better get primed up for the gardening season coming up and get it over with. So,
now, what kind of recovery are we talking about? Because a lot of people have that done. Mm-hmm. I mean, that seems to be so, I don't want to say common, but an often done surgery. Is it a long recovery?
It takes a long time. You got to do all your physical therapy, and which I do religiously. And I've actually made good strides, no pun intended. But takes a long time. It takes probably about a year before you really are kind of truly back in action. And even then, it's still difficult to kneel, which in the garden, that can be a little tricky. So.
Well, that's what I was. My next question: what in growing season now? You'll have to back off for a year or so.
Oh no!
Oh no! Never.
No, can't back off. Just have to readjust. Have to use a kneeling pad, which is great for helping. And there's different thicknesses. I have a pretty thick one that my mom gave me, and kneeling benches, sitting down while you're gardening or while you're weeding. One thing I did do in anticipation of this and probably the future is put in 3 raised beds where I didn't have raised beds before. And that is, I'm looking forward to that because I can literally stand up and garden. Yeah. And that's one of the advantages of those for people who have limited space or limited physical abilities in one way or another. Raised beds are terrific.
I was thinking about doing that one of these years. Mm-hmm. For the less to mow, too, just have a garden.
Less to mow. And it's easier on the weeds are less prevalent in raised beds.
Good point. Well, let's welcome, as usual, Julie, our listeners to join in on this conversation. If you have any kind of a lawn and garden question, love to hear from you. Phone it in, text it in, 651-461-9226. A listener sent this in just a bit ago. Julie, good question. How dangerous is it for our trees when we experience erratic temperatures at 30 degrees one day and maybe 3 the next?
Well, remember that these trees have had some time this year to go into dormancy. So that's where they kind of shut down for the winter. So it's not, if those temperatures kind of happen in the winter, it can be stressful for the trees, but remember that they're dormant. They're not trying to produce flowers at this time or fruit, so it's a little less of an issue. Where it can be a problem is when we have those fluctuating temperatures, particularly in the fall when we're trying to get, the plants are trying to go dormant, and worse is in the spring when they're coming out of dormancy. That's when it can be really tough on plants to fluctuate from really cold temperatures to warm temperatures because they get kind of screwed up. They start to produce buds, and the buds then get cold, and sometimes we have late freezes that can affect things like flowering and fruiting. So it can be hard on plants that way. Hopefully people have been, anticipating this because this is Minnesota, have been doing things like watering their plants through the fall, allowing that hydration to get into the soil. That can be much better for the roots of the plant. And then also fencing plants. We have an excellent tip in our Yard and Garden News in our January garden checklist about screening plants from animal browsing. And that can really do a number on plants.
Oh, boy. A couple of shows ago, I mentioned to both Mary and Teresa that a couple of years ago, I planted a Japanese yew, and I fenced it off
because
I know the deer around here love it.
Yes.
Well, because of the heavy snow, whatever, the netting that I used kind of pushed down. And boy, did they nibble, unfortunately.
Oh, yeah.
Big
hair. Bad.
Let's hope it comes back, so rearrange. But yeah, that's still the best guard, isn't it, for any rabbits
right.
or anything, is fencing.
Right. And there's a number of different kinds of fencing to use depending on what the objective is. So take a look at that article. We also have good articles in our Yard and Garden website under trees and shrubs and how to protect them through the winter.
Very good. Yeah, we'll keep reminding folks of that great website, extension.umn.edu. Now, here we are. You can't get outside, not just because of your knee surgery, but because it's cold and it's not gardening season. What do you do? Now, I know you've kind of retired a little bit from the extension, but so what are you doing during the winter? What do gardening people do?
Well, I'm paying attention to watering my plants, to taking a look at them. I have a whole array of houseplants from, you know, your usual Christmas cactus to a Norfolk pine that's kind of still small, and then also into orchids and some of the other plants in that respect. A lot of succulents, too. So I took some in from a dish garden that I had when it became fall, planted them inside, and they're doing great, and I anticipate planting them outside again in another dish garden in the spring. So I'm checking them pretty, you know, every few days at least, feeling the soil to see if the plant is dry, because our houses are so dry in Minnesota. We have, you know, forced air heating, and we don't have a lot of humidity. And so it's important to keep checking those plants and watering them accordingly. Remember that they should drain really well. Don't water them and let them sit in water, but make sure that you put them in a sink, give them a good shot of water so that they can really soak that into the soil, and that can get into the roots and hydrate that plant. And you don't want to overwater, too. Some of these plants, like orchids, for example, they actually like to dry out in that bark that they grow in before you start rewatering them again. So learn about your plants that you have and then water them accordingly. So I'm doing a lot of that.
Good point. Call us, Texas. Julie's waiting for your call or text this hour, 651-461-9226. Here's another text. Good morning, Texas says, I brought in a 5-foot hibiscus this fall. It was fine for a few months. Then it died back a bit. Now I have spotted some new growth. Branches have 2 to 4 inch of green tips. Should I fertilize? Any thoughts would be appreciated.
Oh, my gosh. That is a great question. So hibiscus, the tropical hibiscus, do that. When we bring them in, they'll sometimes be full of buds, they'll bloom, but they may start to drop off a lot of leaves. They turn yellow and fall off, kind of make a mess. You got to clean it up regularly. But this caller or texter is experiencing exactly the next step, and that's where the plant actually starts to put new leaves out. And some of that happens because of the change of the conditions that the plant is now growing in. If you've had it outside on your deck or patio, and so you've had it in summer weather, you've had it in full sun, it's been great growing conditions, then you bring it into your house and suddenly there's less sun, different kinds of air, and less humidity. And so that plant may change its leaves by dropping those leaves and then go ahead and put out new leaves for the growing season coming up. Doing a great job, it sounds like. I think you could start to fertilize when you start to see that new growth on your houseplants. That's a good sign that you can start fertilizing. Even the houseplants need to kind of go dormant in the winter. And so you don't want to force them into a lot of blooming by constantly fertilizing them. So watch for new growth when you start to see it, and then start fertilizing at about 1/4 to 1/2 the strength of the recommended.
Indeed. If you have questions about your houseplants or maybe your lawns, yeah, we'll do them. It's 10 above zero. We'll talk lawns. Absolutely. Listener sent this in, Julie. When I put my amaryllis bulb into dormancy, should I remove it from the soil and store just the bulb? Should I trim back the roots at that time, too?
You don't have to. You can set the whole pot into a cool, dark area. Let that plant, that bulb, go dormant. Again, we're letting these plants kind of rest, take a break from growing actively. And after about 12 weeks, you can take it back out, put it out in a sunny window, and start watering it again, just as you normally would. And it should start to, sometimes you'll start to see new growth before you even do that. The plant will start to go out, come out of dormancy. But I have a whole bunch of amaryllis that are in pots down in my garage where it's cool and dark. And so now I'm thinking I have to start bringing them up now and get them out in the sun.
All right. Julie, hang on. It's great to have you back. Let's invite our listeners to join in on this conversation as we head to a break. 651-461-9226. Any lawn or garden question for Julie Weisenhorn here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Stay with us. And if you're just joining us, Julie Weisenhorn, we're welcoming Julie back. See, it's been so long, I'm having trouble pronouncing your name after all these years. How many years have we been doing this?
Oh, my gosh. Since, I think, 13, 14 years?
I believe that.
I think 2012 or 2013, I think we started.
Man.
Yeah.
It's moving.
It's too quickly. Long show.
But it's great to have you back. Julie's answering those lawn and garden questions as usual after all these years. If you have one, call us, text us, 651-461-9226. Another texter says this, Julie, can you winter seed tomatoes in milk jugs?
Oh, boy, that's a... I wish Teresa were on for that. She's an excellent winter sower. Mostly winter sowing is done for plants that need to go through a cold period. And by winter sowing, we mean putting, in this case, as a texter asked, is using milk jugs. You kind of cut them in half, fill the bottom with soil that's moist, put your seeds in there, and then tape, put the lid back on or the top, flip it back over, and then tape it around there and set it outside. And we do that for seeds that need to go through winter, like native plant seeds, for example. Let's say you want to grow a bunch of butterfly weed, or you want to grow some of the Rudbeckia that's native or something. You can do that and do winter sowing, and those seeds will go through that cold period. The problem with tomatoes is they're warm season plants. Same with peppers and eggplants, tomatillos. So it's better to actually start those indoors in either seed pots, or you can start them in a flat or in separate pots where it's warm. I like to use a heat mat underneath any of the seeds I'm starting. That helps to regulate temperature, keeps it about 75 degrees. And it also helps to minimize things like damping off, where you have a lot of cold conditions in that damp soil that the seed is in. It can sometimes cause the plant or the seedling to mold and die. So, and then put those under lights. And that would be the best way to do tomatoes. We do have good information on starting seeds on our website under the vegetable section. And also, Laura's got some really great Hort Shorts, which are little short YouTube videos about starting seeds as well. So those can be found on extension.umn.edu. Go to Yard and Garden and then click on Hort Shorts. It's right under the link to the podcast for the show, right at the top of the page,
so great. You
can't miss it.
I got to do that. Speaking of Lauren, speaking of the Arboretum, you, for those that don't know, Julie has, you've since retired from there, but I was going to say, but not really. You're still going to, you're going to go back in a different capacity, right?
Yeah, so I was a master gardener before I worked for Extension for Hennepin County, and so I'm going to be working as a master gardener with Laura on the foodscape and volunteering in that aspect, so I'll still be around out there and helping her and the other master gardeners that I'll be volunteering with, and also being on the show. So I'm probably scheduled about once a month or so. We try to all trade off so that we can keep it mixed up for the listeners, keep it interesting with different voices. So, yeah, looking forward to doing that.
Well, you've had a great career in the first
Super
part of
fun.
It, and now you've got a whole nother exciting other half.
Exactly.
Yeah. And new knees to boot.
And new knees
pardon
to
the
boot.
Expression. All right. Back to the text. Again, I don't want to get off the subject of the Arboretum. We always like to find out what's going on there. Should we do that now or should we wait till
sure.
after the break?
Sure.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, the one exciting thing that I love every single year at this time is our spring flower show. It opens on January 31st, and it's open through March 15th. Super exciting. The whole place is decorated with flowers. It's amazing. It's like you're walking into an indoor garden. So you can get details for that at arb.umn.edu. That's the website for the Arboretum. You do need tickets to get into the Arboretum still, but take a look at that. They make it really easy to visit. The other thing, too, is if your kids are interested in summer day camps at the Arboretum, they're for children of all ages. Member registration, if you're an Arboretum member, you can register your children starting January 20th, and these fill up super fast. So get on get that on your calendar to get on a line and register your kids for those summer camps. They're so fun. And I've seen some of the kids, the work that they do down there, the fun that they have in the garden spaces. And we have such amazing teachers at the Arboretum who work with our youth and our adults as well. And it's a lot of fun. So if you want to enroll your kid, remember they fill up really fast. So January 20th, registration opens for members of the Arboretum.
Lots of good things happening at
so
the
much
Arboretum.
Stuff.
We got to get back here and have lunch there. And that,
yeah,
great
that would be fun.
There. Let's do
That'd
it.
That'd be great.
It's my treat this time.
Aww.
All right. How do you get rid of fungus gnats in geraniums? I've tried starving them, listener says, and watering with a funnel, but they're still there.
Yeah, so fungus gnats have little larvae that feed on the roots or at the kind of anything that's decomposing in the soil. And you see the adults, they look like fruit flies, basically. And you kind of wonder, do I have fruit flies or is there something else going on? If they're around your plants, chances are they're fungus gnats. And they thrive in constantly moist or wet soil. So if your plant isn't draining very well, if you are overwatering plants, if your plants are sitting in water in the saucer or another type of container, if you have a secondary container on the outside, that's going to be a perfect condition for fungus gnats. What you want to do to get rid of them, and there are additives, chemicals you can add to the soil. There's also people put sand over the top of the soil sometimes, and that will kind of smother them. But what I like to do is repot my plant. So I will take the plant out, and you want to wash the roots off so that if there are any larvae, they're very tiny, or any eggs in there, you want to wash all those off. Then use some new sterile soil. Buy a new bag of soil that's been stored indoors at your favorite garden center. Wash the pot or get a new pot. Wash it with hot soapy water and then repot that plant. And then be really careful not to overwater it. Make sure you have a good drainage hole in your plant, in your pot, so that that water is flowing through really easily. And you might even want to take the plant out of, take it into the sink, water it, let it drain really well, give it a half hour, put it back in the window or on the saucer that you have it in. So I've done clinics before, houseplant clinics, where literally the out kind of decorative pot is half full of water because all the person has done is kept watering and watering and it's filled up this decorative pot outside of the other pot. So when they're double potted. So
wow.
Yeah, drainage and don't overwater and then make sure that you know, that's the best way is to repot that plant, really
yeah.
make it clean.
It's a process, but it's got to be done.
It is.
All right. Now, hang on, Julie. We're going to look at that forecast to be right back. We have about another half hour of our Smart Garden show to go. If you have any kind of a lawn or garden question, we'd love to hear from you. Call us. Text us. 651-461-9226 from News Talk 830. Of course, this is WCCO. If you are just joining us, we are welcoming Julie Weisenhorn back to CCO Radio. It's been a while. Julie answering those questions, those lawn and garden questions, as usual this morning. So call us. You want to talk to Julie via phone? That's great. Otherwise, you can just send her a text. 651-461-9226. Another text just in. Are overwintering hibiscus plants to be watered while dormant?
Yes, you want to keep those plants watered. They're tropical plants. They will, if they don't have any leaves on them now or buds, or the buds are small, they will start to open up. So definitely be watering those.
All right, Julie, this is a three-part, three-question part text right. here. Texter has a very mature Christmas cactus that is overdue to be repotted. Texter says, when I transplant it to a larger pot, what is the, quote, rule for size of the new pot? What would the ratio of new soil to plant be? Also, should I trim any of the roots?
Good questions. Basically, how to repot that plant. Usually with repotting, we go a couple inches wider across the diameter. You can go a little bit. That can flex a little bit here and there. You don't want to stay the same size, but definitely go at least 2 inches wider, maybe a little bit more, 3 inches or four. So that's the diameter of the pot. And as far as the ratio of soil to the plant, it basically depends on how big the root ball is and then how much soil you need to add. So there really isn't a formula for that. You fill the pot up and then you tuck the plant in. You just put that in and then, you know, make sure that you've left a little bit of a lip at the top so that you can water and the water can soak into the plant. And as far as root pruning goes, really for Christmas cactus, that's not going to necessarily be much of an issue with a home plant like that. The only thing I would say is if you find there's a lot of dead roots, you might want to trim those off. They'll be dry and crispy, or they might be kind of soft and squishy. You may want to trim those off. Some Christmas cactus that we buy are actually like multiple plants in the pot. So if you've bought one at a garden center, if you've bought one at a grocery store or something, you may find when you take them out, you've got three plants in that pot. So you could actually pot them up each separately. And those can be relatively small pots. They don't have to be very large pots, but it's kind of a nice surprise.
Yeah. Here's our phone number. It's also our text number, 651-461-9226. Texter wants to trim a swamp oak and royal red maple. When is a good time to trim the branches?
Let's see. So oak you could do now. This is a good time to do it. We want to not be trimming oaks from April through pretty much July, middle of July, because of oak wilt. And that's a really devastating disease that can that moves in, at that time of the year and can infect other oaks. So this is a good time to do your oaks in the middle of the winter when they're dormant. As far as the maple goes, you could do that now too. That should be fine. If you wait a little bit into spring, you may see some sap running, and that's perfectly normal. But winter is a good time to prune a lot of plants because they are dormant, and they can recover much more quickly in the spring.
Kind of related. Texter appreciates our show. Thank you very much. The question is, would it be all right to trim my hydrangea trees and crabapple trees now? We head south in April and get back in mid-May.
You could certainly do your crabapple tree. A lot of times we wait until March to do that, but since if you're leaving, you can either do it right before you go or you can do that now. So that's fine. Hydrangeas, you could also cut that back too. We mostly leave the dead flowers on hydrangeas because they do offer winter interest in our landscapes. But you can certainly trim those back now. And I would recommend taking a look at our video on pruning hydrangeas and our webpage. It's under our trees and shrubs section at extension.umn.edu, Yard and Garden.
That is such, you know, and for folks, Julie, that have not checked that out yet, there's so many good things in that thing. You and your colleagues have put a whole lot of love into that. And there's just, talk about winter reading. If you're kicking back, maybe you're recovering from knee surgery like Julie.
Exactly.
I mean, what a great, great time to check that out.
Yeah, it has a lot of good information on it. Laura and John are doing these garden checklists. We started these last year, and they're really helpful, like short bits of information, kind of a reminder for you for the month. You know, in January you should be doing this, in February you should do this. But there's also those hort shorts I mentioned that Laura's put a ton of work into, along with a couple other colleagues. And those are just a couple of minutes, and they're also really timely as well. So I mentioned starting seeds, which we're all starting to think about, you know, buying seeds and getting those started pretty soon. And so take a look at some of those videos, those hort shorts that Laura did. And they're under right at the beginning of the page of Yard and Garden under the links to the podcast for this show.
Very good. Looking at a text from a listener, Julie, it's saying, I took cuttings from my beautiful dragon wing begonia rooted, planted it in November. They are growing nicely. Anything special I should do now?
Sounds like you're doing everything just right. If you've planted them and they're growing fine, keep doing what you're doing, and you'll have a great crop of those dragon wing begonias to use in the summer.
Not a question, a comment about those fungus gnats. This listener, in the end, they tried many things. They really had good luck with this sticky paper for them.
What
is that about?
So yellow sticky traps are kind of, they're about the size of a recipe card, 3x5 or so. And you can stand them or hang them in plants. And the insects are attracted to the yellow color. And they're super sticky. And so you can catch them that way too. And if you have fungus gnats and you've repotted your plant, but you want to be sure that you're getting all of the insects, because some of them might have been flying off while you were repotting, then you could use those sticky traps to kind of clean up the rest of the population.
All right. Texter says this, Julie, my ficus has been thriving since I got it, but now its leaves are yellowing and dropping off rapidly. What could be wrong? Should I fertilize?
I don't know about fertilizing at this point, but I think you could definitely just reexamine your watering ways. So are you watering frequently enough? Are you overwatering? Is your pot draining well? Is the plant sitting in water? And in some cases, those ficus, I'm guessing they have Ficus benjamina, which is the weeping fig that we have. It's very common as an indoor plant. But sometimes those plants go through a process where they do drop their leaves, and then they bud out. And I think that that plant in particular is sensitive to changes. So if you've moved it in your house from, say, one window to another, one room to another, if temperatures have fluctuated wherever that plant is, those can also, it's a real picky plant in that respect, that it will drop a lot of leaves, but they also then will produce new leaves too.
I remember having a ficus many years ago, and that same thing happened. Are they subject to critters as well?
Yeah, any plant would be subject to critters, but I think in the case of the ficus, my experience with it, I used to have a very large one that was a gift, and I moved it from office to office and house to house and, moved it around, and it dropped its leaves completely every single time I moved it. So, and I've heard that from other people too. It's just really particular about being in one place, left alone, water it, make sure it gets enough water, and then just, keep it in a window that it really likes.
Yeah. All right, just an interesting note, texter says, you mentioned the Norfolk pine, and it made me think of those Cub Scout trees. I planted one years ago, and it has survived pretty well. Last year, it didn't look so good, and I noticed it was full of daddy long legs. Do they happen to like pines? I didn't do anything to get rid of them.
I have no idea. It just seems like they like that particular
plant.
It's home. I don't know.
Let's see. Good morning. Love the show. Thank you. This year I brought fewer plants in for the winter, but still have a house full. My problem plant is my Plumeria frangipani.
Sure.
Let's see. There's a follow-up here. It comes as a box of papers and with wooden popsicle-type sticks that you stick into the pot next to your plant. It took about a month, but no more gnats. Oh, I see. This is a gnat. I'm jumping from one topic to another as the text screen jumps.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me figure out where we are here. More tips on fungus gnats. I have an Easter cactus that has not bloomed for several years, although it grows like crazy. How can I get it to bloom?
Yeah. So I have one too, and mine has barely bloomed. Blooms a little bit each year. So Christmas cactus, I'm going to back up because they're kind of all in the same group. Christmas cactus are photoperiod plants that respond to the shorter days and cooler temperatures, which is why they bloom in Thanksgiving, Halloween, Christmas. And Easter cactus, which are in the same genus but a different species, are the opposite. They respond to longer days and more light. And so it's important that that plant be in a pretty sunny location, or at least be getting some sunlight, probably filtered morning sunlight, in the summer when you put it outside. So and that's when it responds to blooming. I have a lot of trouble getting mine to bloom reliably. Like the texture, mine is huge. It's super healthy. It looks great. But it really doesn't bloom very much. So I keep experimenting with it. I kind of move it around and I, you know, try to get it under some grow lights to see if that helps. And then make sure it's in a warm spot instead of a cool spot, which is the opposite of what I do with my Christmas cactus, which are in a cool spot that doesn't get a whole lot of light sometimes. You can kind of tweak those two elements, heat and your temperature and light, to push your plant into bloom. So good luck. Let's maybe check in a couple of months.
Very good. I want to back up a little bit, Julie, about that plumeria that I kind of glossed over as the screen mm-hmm. jumped. The problem plant is my plumeria. Texture says it has shed most of its leaves and is starting to look like a bare sausage. Do I up the fertilizer in water?
Well, let's see. Plumeria. So plumeria, if I remember correctly, are beautiful scented. They have lovely waxy flowers. They're kind of white. They have a yellow streak or yellow blush down the center of the petals, and they smell great. They, I associate them with Hawaii because they are often used for leis. And if I remember correctly about those plants, they flower before they leaf out. So they'll drop their leaves and then go into dormancy, and then they'll flower and then they leaf out. I think that is correct. I don't have my book near me to check that out. And so if it's dropped its leaves, you might just give it a break. And then, you know, just, I wouldn't fertilize it necessarily, but I would probably just, you know, give it some water, make sure it's, the pot is draining well, so it doesn't, you know, get too wet. And then hopefully it'll start producing flowers. I don't know if this texture has had flowers on their plumeria, but I believe that's how the kind of life cycle of that plant is.
Very good. Well, we need to take a bit of a break here, but we have more questions to get answered on the other side, so stay with us. 651-461-9226. More Smart Garden straight ahead on News Talk 830 WCCO. And welcome back to the remaining minutes of our Smart Garden show. Denny Long here, along with Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M. And more text, Julie. We're not done yet. Let's see how many. As you know, we tend to get pretty busy here. This listener wants to know, can I prune out 3 to 4 branches of my Weigela this time of year?
Weigela. So they are, yes, I believe you can. They are later flowering. In other words, they flower in the summer. So they will set buds in the spring when they come out. So, yes, I believe you could prune some out.
We've had this hour questions about critters, mostly fungus gnats. But this texter wants to know, any suggestions to get rid of pantry moths? Haven't heard of that.
Oh, yeah. So pantry moths, I'm guessing they mean like an Indian meal moth. So these are moths that the eggs are in, like wheat products, flour and rice and stuff. And I think, well, not rice, that's not wheat. But and I think basically you want to go through your pantry and make sure that you've got, you know, fresh, you know, maybe you want to toss some of the stuff that you have in the pantry. Maybe it's gotten a little bit old. As far as getting rid of them once you've got them, I imagine that there may be a trap for those, like the yellow sticky traps.
Oh, but yeah.
I've never had those. Take a look, though. Just Google that, because it could be the Minnesota Department of Ag has information on that, or also the USDA. On pantry moths, or look up Indian meal moths too. We might have a page on it too, under some of our food safety information.
You had kind of a suggestion about the listener about a couple of different places where you can find plumeria information.
Yeah, so I did a quick search while we were on break there with the commercial, and University of Wisconsin has a really good page on plumeria. So does the University of Florida. And really, Florida is one of my go-tos for those tropical plants when I don't really know much about them. I've never grown them. And so that's a really good resource as well. So take a look at those two universities, and they have, it looks like they've got some good information on the plumeria.
All right. Listener says, hi, Julie. I just planted my amaryllis yesterday. I put it in a pot that has drainage holes. When you buy an amaryllis, the pot that comes with it doesn't have drainage holes. Do you think, will my amaryllis do okay?
In the pot with drainage holes, it will do much better. Yeah. Sometimes we get kind of inexpensive plastic pots that they come in and they don't put, you know, holes in them for whatever reason, because they think you're just going to throw that plant away after it blooms. I like to keep those bulbs from year to year and see if I can get them to rebloom. We do have a great amaryllis webpage on Yard and Garden, and it explains a lot about repotting amaryllis and also about caring for them and dealing with kind of issues with them as well. They're pretty easy care plants. I love them. They're one of my favorite seasonal plants.
Let's back up a little bit, too, about the arboretum, and I think the listener is asking a good question. Do you always have to be a member to get in there? But no, you do not.
No, it's no, nice you do to. Not. Mm-hmm. Yep, it's great to be a member because you help support the arboretum and all of its objectives with research and also bringing people closer to plants. But also, you can purchase tickets online, and you would want to do that before you go. If you become a member, you don't necessarily need a ticket except for Fridays through Mondays. Those are usually the busiest days. So take a look at the tickets page at arb.umn.edu. It explains if you're a member or if you're a visitor. And to be honest, if you go to the Arboretum three times a year, you may as well be a member because you're basically going to, you know, you'll get the magazine, you'll get special discounts with your member card. It's easier to, you know, faster to get in. So it really pays to be a member versus just buying one ticket. Plus, depending on your membership, you can bring guests with you, too.
That's really true, yeah. Mm-hmm. And for those that don't know where it's located, it's an easy drive.
Right, yeah. It's just west on Highway 5. And then just when you pass over or cross over the intersection of 41 and 5, just past Chanhassen, it's in Chaska, technically. And the entrance is there. Now, the entrance will be changing, but not for a while. They're building a new entrance that will be a much easier entrance to go in and out of, and just going to be a beautiful entrance to the Arboretum. So it's super exciting.
I saw that driving on my way to Waconia.
Yeah, that's going to be a little further west on 5, but you can still get in the original entrance. Not a problem.
Excellent. You're going to have to help me with this. Is it possible to grow, and he or she spells it, F-R-E-E-S-I-A, like freesia. From bulbs in this state. I know they have an incredibly long growing season until they finally flower. I've had little luck growing them here, whereas my sister has no problem in California. What's that about?
Well, I think that's probably that's a summer bulb that we would grow here. So it's a bulb that you would plant out in the summer in the warmer weather. And the texture is right. They have a very long growing season. We may not have a long enough summer before they'll bloom. You know, they might grow, they might produce leaves, but they may not bloom very reliably. So I don't know if they would grow very well indoors. So if any of the listeners have ever had success growing freesia bulbs indoors as a forest plant, that would be interesting. But yeah, consider California's growing season, and then ours is much shorter. So may not be a very doable thing, but certainly something to try. Kind of fun.
Why not? Looking at a text, Julie, we're almost out of time here, but thank you for a very informative show. Longtime listener, I've used the yellow sticky traps and mosquito pellets / donuts. I put some pellets on the surface of the soil, a drainage saucer, and watering can. It prevents them from multiplying.
Okay.
Oh, there's yet another tip. again, for those that, now, you know what, somebody wants to know when's. I forgot to ask you this. When are the Abiders playing next?
Oh, you guys are so nice. We are on a winter hiatus a little bit. Our next gig right now, we just have scheduled in June. We'll be putting those on our website at theabiders.net. So we're kind of taking a little break while I recover from the knee surgery, and we've got a couple members out of state right now for the winter. So, but thanks for asking. We're working on a new album, so...
That's exciting.
Out. Yeah, it should be coming out this spring sometime.
Excellent. And again, for those that have never tried getting on that university website, give us that info if you would.
Yeah, extension.umn.edu. Click on Yard and Garden, or just type in your question in the search box too, and it'll pop up. And regarding the houseplant questions, if you have questions about managing pests on houseplants, we have an excellent webpage on that under the houseplant section.
And another listener wants you to reiterate the information about Laura's videos.
Oh, yes. And on the homepage of the Yard and Garden, right under the podcast, right above the podcast or right under them for the show are Hort Shorts. And those are short snippet, 2-minute videos on YouTube. You'll go right to that page, and Laura's got a ton of great information on there.
Absolutely. Julie, what fun it was to have you back here. I know we're going to be talking in a couple of weeks or so.
Great to be back, Denny.
And take care of those knees.
Thanks.
Brand new knees. All right. Thanks, Julie. Julie Weisenhardt from the U of M.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson. On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.